And we realized that one of the primary bottlenecks experienced by people building on Celo was the uncertainty around governance, some frustration around where community treasury funds were being allocated to, and overall this kind of lack of accountability and leadership for new joiners, but also existing joiners that kind of rally behind. At the same time, you saw across other blockchains, whether it's Arbitrum or Optimism, Polygon, you started to see experiments around how they organize and coordinate their resources. I think one of the kind of the teams that have been furthest with this is Optimism. They've created like a dual structure of a token house and a citizen house with a separation of powers, different ways to coordinate. It's still super decentralized in a sense. It's hundreds or even thousands of people making decisions together, but they're first aligning on how they're going to make those decisions and toward what and in what structure. And it's really that kind of those setups that inspired us to say, hey, let's take a couple months to better understand the Celo ecosystem. I've been building on Celo now for 2.5 years, but even I have been going through a lot of learning to better understand the stakeholders and the pains and the desires. And that essentially started to come together over the past months in this initial Celo public goods strategy proposal, which also included some minor governance updates. And in short, what it is I would say a pilot and a transition moment for Celo, but it's definitely not an end state.
Yo, what is poppin', ReFi Nation? John here with another episode of ReFi Podcast. We sit down today with Luke Weber from Colectivo and Monty Merlin from ReFi DAO. Monty, Luke, and seven other stewards have recently carved out a significant amount of capital from the Celo Community Fund to support the emergence of a Celo public goods ecosystem. In today's conversation, we dive into what is a public good? Why is this vitally important for the climate movement as a whole? And how does this emergence of regenerative economics in the digital space translate into the real world today? How can we fund problems and causes that we really care about and know that our capital is going to where it's needed most? This story takes us all the way back to the origins of Ethereum and the challenges of funding ecosystem development and open source software more broadly. Today, we get to hear about who this is for, who can apply, and ways that people can get involved. It's a six-month initiative with over $1.7 million of CUSD and 700,000 Celo that has been allocated to this initial pilot. And what we hope as we see the Celo Layer 2 transition come into fruition is a broader coalition of blockchain ecosystems that are funding public goods together. This notion that impact equals profit is driving positive change as prices continue to recover and as more and more people come into this space looking for ways to get involved. It is my hope personally that we see this capital being deployed to places on the ground that need it most, the communities on the front lines fighting climate change, navigating social and economic injustice and inequality, and building towards a more regenerative and prosperous future. Hope you enjoy the show. Drop us a review if you do, and let us know what you think. Thanks. Monty, brother, it's been a while. Good morning, sir. Where are you calling in from?
Hello, good to be here. I am in London, freshly moved here from about 4 weeks ago, so it's very exciting. Big city. Nice. And feeling good.
Nice. Luke, how are you, brother?
Currently in Utrecht in the Netherlands, doing really well. It's sunny for the first time in a week, so I'm a bit happy today.
Amazing, man. Well, it's been such an honor witnessing the work that you guys have done to carve out this public goods ecosystem on Celo. And yeah, I'm really excited to dive into the work that you're doing, what this means, and also get people up to speed in terms of how they can get involved. Maybe just give us a quick summary, Luke, in terms of what's happened, what you've been working on, and kind of the landscape that we're going to touch on today.
Yeah, so the main topics we're going to jam on are related to Celo public goods, but there's a whole ecosystem of topics around that. We're going to jam all the way back from the origins of Ethereum. I think most people here know me as Luke, the founder of Colectivo, which is one of my kind of lifetime projects that I've been contributing to. But in the end, or at the very beginning, it was Luke interested in Ethereum like 7-8 years ago. So starting all the way from there, kind of why Ethereum, why blockchains, why crypto, why all those things, and then bringing it more to now, kind of how Celo came to be, how Celo is evolving, how this landscape of Ethereum blockchains and EVM compatible blockchains and layer twos is evolving, how public goods are becoming or kind of taking center stage when it goes to blockchain coordination, and specifically how we're doing that around Celo with Celo public goods, how we're experimenting with it this next half year, but also where we hope it evolves towards.
Awesome, man. Love it. Love it. And Monty, I know that there's been so much enthusiasm coming from you about this opportunity in particular as you stepped into leadership at ReFiDAO. Just give me a little bit of a teaser of like what's really stoking your fire here and what this means for the broader ecosystem.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I've just been super excited about Celo from the beginning because I've always seen it as the place where from its inception, Celo's been about public goods, ReFi, real world assets, financial inclusion. And so I've always felt super value aligned there. And now with all of the innovations going on in public goods funding in Gitcoin and Optimism, I'm really seeing this as the opportunity for Celo to bring to come to the table and come to the party. And there's so many exciting things we can do with the experiments that have been happening and kind of utilizing these primitives, QF, RPGF, hyperserts, building on top of that and really seeing what that can do for the Celo and ReFi ecosystem, I think is super exciting. So yeah, very, very excited to explore that synergy and chat a bit more about what we're exploring and thinking about kicking off this public goods program for Celo the first half of this year.
Amazing, man. Super, super excited. And yeah, behind the scenes, besides my kind of mini sabbatical, I've also just started onboarding a Israeli-Palestinian peace reconciliation organization that I happen to meet in Lisbon. And it's been so refreshing to see people that are completely new to the crypto scene, seeing the power of this technology and getting really excited about not only participating in fundraising, but actually running their own rounds. And so I love kind of the wave that's happening now as price is coming back. People are coming into it with new eyes. And there's also new challenges, new problems to face. But take us back to the origin, Luke. I find it interesting that you describe, you know, your initial love and curiosity for Ethereum. And it seems like Celo's kind of revisiting this home base as well. So yeah, start us off with the story.
Yeah, that's... I got involved in crypto around 2016, which was a couple of years after Ethereum's launch. So I can't really speak too much of kind of times before 2016. But I can take you back to kind of my first experience with crypto. Initially, it was just out of curiosity, but soon started to see patterns between my daily studies of philosophy and business, an evolving world that's moving more and more towards kind of systemic network relationships and this blockchain technology, a technology that creates global computers or global trust machines. For the first time ever, it really allows us to settle on truth globally, instantly, and just opened up a whole space of new opportunities for how we engage with each other through the internet. Right? It's this whole evolution from Web 2 to Web 3, adding kind of the ownership and ability to transfer online without trusted third parties into the mix. So when I got involved, or when I heard about blockchain, I first wanted to just understand, and there wasn't that much more besides Ethereum. Around 2016, 17, though, there was the first kind of wave of alternative programmable blockchains, because Bitcoin is, for example, not, or now it's slowly becoming, but it wasn't a programmable blockchain. So it did allow for storing Bitcoin, sending Bitcoin, kind of getting people excited about this digital cash aspect of crypto. But it wasn't able to coordinate or program on top of that. So once Ethereum launched, there were some kind of small experiments, like I think it was called Color Coins and other initiatives around that time. But then in 2016, 17, more and more people started to realize that Ethereum wasn't going to scale and it wasn't able to coordinate all transactions in the world. And what you saw was a first move of what you would call kind of alternative layer ones that were trying to build a programmable blockchain like Ethereum, but that is more scalable, that can do more transactions per second, because those were really the bottlenecks back in the days. And that's also the origins of Celo, essentially. The Celo founders, Marek and Renee, they wanted to build a startup to bring accessible financial opportunities to the almost 2 billion people, maybe even more at this stage, that are underbanked or unbanked. And they realized that if they want to do that, they cannot pay a dollar a transaction or even 50 cents a transaction or even a cent a transaction on Ethereum, because those participants are unable to engage on a system like that. I firsthand experienced it with some early pilots in the Caribbean. We had a stablecoin in 2018, 2019 with MakerDAO called CuraDai. And it was this one day where the community currency worked. It was stable. People could use it. It was allowing people to exchange value beyond the traditional system. But at some days, the gas costs would go up to a couple dollars. And I would get angry messages. Hey, Luke, why is your app doing XYZ? Why do I need to pay more than what I'm trying to spend? So it's from this friction that in 2017, the Celo founders were like, hey, if we want to solve this kind of unequal financial foundation of the world, we need a better system. But currently, that system cannot be built on Ethereum. And that's why they started Celo in parallel. A lot of learnings, a lot of technology from Ethereum, but optimized for mobile financial inclusion use cases. So there was an element of a native stablecoin. There was an element of being able to run a node on your phone. There was an element of extremely low transaction costs, which really, till this day, have really made them popular in emerging countries and financial inclusion use cases. And kind of as times evolved, right, especially in, let's call this kind of the second wave, which kind of started 2020, 2021, we started to see solutions that did promise those improvements over Ethereum when it comes to speed, costs, at the expense of as little decentralization as possible, right? Because we still want to remain the kind of neutrality of the space. We don't want a kind of centralized party to say, oh, yes, you can do good, but not in Kenya because I don't like Kenyans, for example, or not because here, because they did XYZ. There's a lot of value in this neutrality. But you saw this kind of wave of so-called layer two blockchains that instead of building kind of away from Ethereum, actually embrace Ethereum and build on top of it. They use that kind of strong foundation, this neutral computing power of Ethereum, the security power, and build a solution on top of it that still leverages and kind of roots back to Ethereum without, while improving, again, accessibility, cost, speed, etc. That was happening in 2020, 2021. You saw the first kind of programs, projects starting to launch in that cycle. And then for the past years, we have seen those platforms mature to the point where you have now multiple of these so-called layer twos that are completely connected to Ethereum. They're still growing pains. None of them are like fully decentralized and as secure as Ethereum, but they don't really have to be because they are, especially for less, let's call it less critical transactions. Of course, if you're going to send over, let's say, $50 million from person A to person B, you're probably better off using Bitcoin or Ethereum. Way less risk, way more certainty. But for an average farmer in Vietnam that's doing a $5 transaction, they don't have to pay for all that security. They don't want to even, they don't care if it's recorded globally. They just want to trust that it goes from person A to B. So of course, there's some trade-offs. But what you saw happening in the past years is those programs and these platforms have matured to the point where the technical advantages are becoming less and less of kind of a strategic advantage. Back in the days, 2017, 18, 19, 20, whatever, you could say, oh, we're going to scale blockchains with XYZ technology. You can give it a fancy name or ZK, whatever. In the end, everybody's just trying to solve the same problem with different approaches. But now that some approaches are showing signs of functioning, the terrain is slowly shifting towards people just using those technologies and then building on top of that and then really focusing on the utility that you actually provide with it. And I think that's kind of part of the, of this whole conversation for today is taking us at the point where we are now in 2023, 2024, where some of these platforms have matured to the point that Celo has announced that they want to return home to Ethereum. And returning home essentially means joining a layer two, onboarding onto a technology stack, of course, making some modifications to still make sure that we kind of accomplish the objectives of Celo, this fast finality, cheap transactions, et cetera. But the technology has come to a point where that is possible, where Celo doesn't have to deploy dozens of people to develop its own technology to realize that kind of those opportunities, but instead can just say, hey, these stacks, and there's multiple, are good enough for us to just focus on our key mission of creating a regenerative economy that creates the conditions for prosperity. So, I'm just so excited that after years of solving primarily technical problems, it seems that we're now shifting towards solving actual human problems. And that relates so well to public goods, to impact claims, to kind of all the topics that we're going to jam on today, because all these topics were nice to have a couple of years ago when that is all great. But if we can't transfer for a good price, no one is going to use it. But that's going to be solved relatively soon. UX improvements are coming as well. So we're finally at the space where I think all of us, especially, I know John, Monty, we kind of wish we were there 2-3 years ago. And we maybe even assumed that we were there 2-3 years ago, that we could have already focused on the end users. But I think now we're finally getting to the point where we really can do that. It just changes the entire environment.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how this fits in your mind, Monty. You've obviously got a deep, deep root, even from your earliest years, with a completely different vision of, you know, people and the planet and the problems that we face. How do you see public goods fitting into this transition as humanity figures out to move away from fossil fuels towards renewable regenerative systems?
Totally, totally. Yeah, I've definitely come from a background of more traditional environmentalism and sustainability thinking. And I think that's really informed my view and my thinking. You know, my mother was very involved in the intersection of business and climate, which at the time was quite radical, because the more traditional environmentalists would all be rallying against business or innovation, and the business and innovation would go, well, screw you right back, like, we're going to keep doing this and ignore you. But actually looking at where can we use these forces for good. But there's a lot of tension in that and a lot to unravel. And I think we've seen how that's played out over the past couple decades, you know, with all this greenwashing, with the planet continuing to getting worse, with corporations and governments continuing to not only not do it, but actively subvert the things that we need to be doing. Of course, there's a lot of progress. There's a lot of things to get excited about. But the reality is, we look at the numbers, it's not enough. And so what I was always so excited about, the potential of crypto and blockchain, was it really presented this radical and disruptive force of new technologies to say, can we build these entirely new systems, which previously would only be in the realms of huge banks and governments? We now have democratized these tools. And as Luke was speaking, I was also getting really excited, because I feel like we've just come into the space where the technical challenges of blockchain have started to be solved. So the point we can actually start to deliver on the ideological and lofty aims, because now we actually, the tools are there that we can actually start doing that, as opposed to just the previous blockchain eras of just talking about all this exciting thing. And then you get to using the thing and you're like, oh, damn, this sucks. and, you know, we're definitely still not there yet. Like, I still personally get some anxiety using some of these tools, but you know, with account abstraction coming, with the layer one blockchains being ever more efficient and usable, and all these new primitives coming online as well, like the absolute explosion in public goods innovation, from hyperserts to quadratic funding, all of the stuff we're going to talk about today, I just think we're in such an exciting place to now leverage all of these tools in this modular suite of different Lego blocks that we can now pull together to create really impactful, exciting new systems to fund public goods, climate, social innovation, financial inclusion, this whole range of different things that we can now build with these tools. And so I just think it's a hugely exciting ecosystem of innovation, and excited to see how we can support that with both Celo and ReFiDAO and the whole ReFi kind of movement.
Yeah, I think it's been an interesting evolution for me. You know, my first Gitcoin round was GR12, so like October, November 2021. And it was the first time that Gitcoin carved out like a climate round, and basically made a really firm stance towards positive externalities in this context of public goods. But I'm curious how you'd get this, you know, perception, Monty. Like, how would you define a public good in the broadest sense? And then how is a public good defined in the Celo ecosystem, in particular for, you know, the Celo public goods initiative that you guys have, you know, spun up alongside the community?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've got this kind of economist's definition of a public good, which maybe if you studied A-level economics, you kind of heard of, you know, public goods, these things that are free and available to all, can be enjoyed over and over again, and one person's use of it doesn't diminish the other person's benefits. So, you know, obvious examples, clean air, public education, even street lighting, these kind of things, which traditionally, because of the fact that they're public and free to use, we either rely on governments or charities to fund and support those public goods. And we know that there's a lot of inefficiency and potential for innovation and improvement there in terms of how those you know, goods are funded and managed, and coordinating the commons, et cetera. And so I think that provides a really interesting design space, which very recently we've obviously seen huge amounts of innovation towards in the Web3 space, because really blockchains provide, I think, a really interesting angle here, because they are in a way a new way of generating funding and managing public goods. Because, you know, traditionally you have to raise taxes, right? Or you have to rely on charity. Well, now with blockchains, this infrastructure, we can, you know, they collect sequence of fees from the blockchain itself. So there's a new generation of funds, which then can be allocated with new strategies, all built on kind of open source technology, because the very foundations of blockchain are built on public goods, right? This open source code and protocols. And the more open source code and protocols and apps that you build, the more value that ecosystem has. So there's a really like fundamentally intrinsic link between the state of a blockchain ecosystem's public goods and the long-term success of that blockchain. And so because of that, that's, I think, why we've seen so much innovation going on from, you know, Giveth and Gitcoin and quadratic funding and these kind of dynamics. And yeah, personally, I think that's just hugely interesting and hugely exciting. And there's a lot of digital public goods out there. We can even look at Google being a public good in terms of the Google search capabilities that are available to all. But unfortunately, Google is owned by a super massive corporation that, while it appears free to use its services, you're inadvertently giving up power and control and to an elite group of shareholders. Attention. And corporations. And now again, with blockchains, we're seeing this governance innovation, right? Can we actually have a community-owned platform, you know, proper inclusion? Mm. It's messy and it's hard, you know, like at the same time. So, you know, there's been a lot of learnings in that space in terms of how do we actually get towards these democratic, you know, decentralized, distributed systems. But I think there is, again, a whole cycle of innovation and that we've seen happening in that space. So yeah, there's just a lot of different elements, I think, that are coming together to make this a really exciting sort of nexus for innovation in the blockchain space. Basically, the more experiments that we see in this domain of public goods funding and impact innovation, I think the more impact we will actually see blockchain and Web3 have on the world. And so while it's been amazing to see Giveth, Gitcoin, Optimism, all this kind of stuff, I'm so excited that Celo is now joining this party. And with the formation of the Celo Public Goods stewards and organization to actually really push forward the needle within the Celo ecosystem and with the kind of capacity and potential that we have there, I think is a hugely exciting kind of evolving force. And I'm very excited to see how that evolves over many cycles now, because we've really started to lay some initial foundations with this proposal that's been recently put forward.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited to dive deeper into the actual proposal, like how much capital is available, who it's for, how people can apply, you know, your plans for allocating this. I think it's great to jump into that. But just briefly, what was coming to mind to me is this kind of emerging notion of, you know, these networks in some ways mimicking nations of people gathering around a shared vision, a shared story of what it means to be human, the culture and the values that they express, the ways that they create society. And obviously we saw Bitcoin kind of emerge as this first radical digital money experiment with Ethereum thereunder and thousands of others, with quite a large amount of this really hindering on speculation. But, you know, the honest truth is that now, you know, at the point of recording, we're looking at an over $2 trillion market cap collectively, which puts all blockchain ecosystems together around the size of the annual GDP of, like, Italy. And this is, you know, top 10. We're looking at really significant sums of capital here for the first time in blockchain's evolution. Obviously, we saw the cycle before, but it's interesting to see each of these ecosystems emerge within these networks have different opinions about how to allocate capital, how to cover, you know, the clean air and paved roads and public education, so to speak, of the blockchain world. And I'm curious to get your take, Luke, on just like high level how the funding landscape has emerged in Celo from this initial inception of like, money is beautiful. Money is a technology. Money is a tool that can be designed to solve the hardest problems, as opposed to this, you know, very highly speculative environment. So yeah, take us away. I'd love to get your take on how it's emerged and what's available.
Yeah, I think money is beautiful is such a powerful sentence. I remember in my early days, I was afraid to make money because I saw it as a kind of negative thing due to kind of the high degree of inequality in the world and kind of seeing it as a greedy thing. But the moment I realized, and this is partially due to blockchains and the ability to program values into money, that completely changed the thing for me. Money is a means to an end. If your end is worth the effort, then the means are just working in kind of to support that. So money is beautiful. I think with Salo's vision to create a digital regenerative economy, I think that really states already what they're trying to do with the end goal of creating the conditions for prosperity for all. It's a very kind of logical why money is in there. We want to create the conditions for prosperity for all, but in order to do so, we need to make sure that everybody can participate in these like coordination games, that everybody can contribute, earn, get rewarded, get a share of the cake that we're producing together. And I think it's such a kind of a powerful vision. And that's kind of relates back to kind of what you were saying about blockchains, right? And just the ability to coordinate, to create an appealing vision that solves real problems and coordinate towards that vision. I think is that's ultimately what sets a blockchain, specifically Salo, apart. And in the early years, Salo was really a pioneer of on-chain coordination, so coordinating through a blockchain system. Ever since it launched in 2020, everything has been, so all the large decisions have been made on-chain with votes from the Salo stakers or the Salo holders. I think one element in there, and that is a, I'd almost say a slippery slope, right? We used to call, and we still call these organizations decentralized autonomous organizations or digital organizations, if you just wanted to make it simpler. But there was this assumption that decentralization was the primary objective. Yeah. And I think over time, we've seen time after time, and there's some nice articles about, around this, but decentralization doesn't have to mean disorder and chaos. And I think that this is part of the whole public goods, on-chain public goods initiative, is actually being a counter to that, saying, yes, we want it all to be decentralized. We want a wide range of multi-stakeholders to have input, but the structure and the rails need to be built with purpose by people. Because if we don't clearly define the ins and the outs, the objectives, the goals, the priorities, the system will not be able to coordinate as efficiently as it potentially could. So I'm a big fan of distributed but organized, really trying to bring sense into these systems. And I think that's part of this element that we're trying to do with the Salo Public Goods Initiative. So just to take you back, right, between 2020 and 2023, Salo already had an on-chain community treasury with initially, I think it was 7 or 8% of all Salo tokens in there, which was used to allocate grants, strategic grants to project building on top of Salo. We saw some great initiatives from Salo Camp, an incubator for Salo projects, present the community-run grants program, and also large initiatives like the Climate Collective, the Credit Collective, all initiatives that were funded by the Salo Community Treasury. However, the Salo Community Treasury didn't have a specific body or group that was overseeing it. It was like being collectively overseen by all the stakeholders. But as times get more busy and people focus on their own things, people often only had an element of the context. There wasn't like one single point of truth or vision that people could just rally behind, which started to lead to some initial frictions or inefficiencies in 2023, when there were multiple types of proposals, right? Over time, these proposals became more complex and there was an increase of proposals being submitted. And we started to see the first signs of kind of the downside of this kind of decentralization and kind of disorganization. And it's essentially where we started this initiative. I was involved initially in Salo Europe, which is one of the initiatives that got funding from the Salo Community Treasury. And we realized that one of the primary bottlenecks experienced by people building on Salo was the uncertainty around governance, the some frustration around where community treasury funds were being allocated to, and overall this kind of lack of accountability and leadership for new joiners, but also existing joiners to kind of rally behind. At the same time, you saw across other blockchains, whether it's Arbitrum or Optimism, Polygon, you started to see experiments around how they organize and coordinate their resources. I think one of the kind of the teams that have been furthest with this is Optimism. They've created like a dual structure of a token house and a citizen house with a separation of powers, different ways to coordinate. It's still super decentralized in a sense. It's hundreds or even thousands of people making decisions together, but they're first aligning on how they're going to make those decisions and toward what and in what structure. And it's really that kind of those setups that inspired us to say, hey, let's take a couple months to better understand the Celo ecosystem. I've been building on Celo now for 2.5 years, but even I have been going through a lot of learning to better understand the stakeholders and the pains and the desires and what so. And that essentially started to come together over the past months in this initial Celo public goods strategy proposal, which also included some minor governance updates. And in short, what it is, I would say, a pilot and a transition moment for Celo, but it's definitely not an end state. And the way we're approaching it is really as a soft transition. So what we've done, we've elected a group of 9 public good stewards who are structuring the effort, but are not making the final decision of who gets funding or not. Because we feel that that is too much of a move. It's definitely something that you can see in, for example, in Optimism, where I think it's dozens of citizens are allocating, for example, the retrospective funding. In our case, we're still leaving it to the Celo voters to ultimately decide which specific parties get funding. But we're already helping by structuring out what type of initiatives make sense, what are approximate budgets, what are the ways people can review this, how does this play into the larger blockchain space, into the Ethereum space, the L2 space, how does this play into the world, what tools can we leverage? And really providing that help is what these stewards are doing and what we are trying to do. And then in terms of the transition, what we did is we have selected 3 different categories of Celo public goods that coincide with the initiatives that were already being funded in the past. So that is regional DAOs, which are kind of local or regional growth networks, Celo incubation, such as an accelerator and whatso, and Celo grants and requests for proposals. And then on top of that, we have the quadratic funding, which is more like an open, using the Gitcoin system, or an open ecosystem, and then also the Celo public goods funding, the retrospective Celo public goods funding, which we're working on to then reward groups retrospectively. So it's kind of this combination of tools that is this kind of new cycle, this new pilot for Celo. The program lasts from essentially start of this month, so February, onwards until the end of June. And then we are also planning a Celo ecosystem conference called Celo Gather at the end of May in Berlin to also bring together multiple stakeholders and really reflect on the changes that are going on, especially in light of this kind of Celo layer 2 decision, which will likely be made in the coming weeks, kind of this decision, which layer 2 ecosystem does Celo join. And yeah, it just feels like a really nice transition stage where we're also rethinking how we manage our community assets, what we want to invest it into, and then also right away learning, kind of reappropriating ourselves to this new ecosystem we're joining and finding synergies with that as well, right? Because amazing. At some point, and I think this is maybe a final note on this concept, is we're moving into a terrain where these clusters of layer twos, with even with outside participants, can co-fund developments and co-fund public goods to an extent that was just unimaginable even 1 or 2 years ago. If you look at all the blockchains, if they don't use the same standards, if they're not kind of on the same team, they all have to pay for the same thing separately. And it's often for-profit companies that provide these infrastructure tools, right? That provide these services. Yeah. Now that we see these clusters forming within those clusters, whether it's Optimism or Arbitrum or Polygon, there will be clusters of blockchains and teams that are sharing economics to some degree, that are on the same team, and they can put the resources together to, at the fraction of a cost, create these innovations. And I think, that's really this coordination phase that we're going into, and it just really excites me.
Super interesting. Yeah, I hadn't begun kind of glimpsing that. I remember the initial Solo 2 proposal mentioning the Optimism stack and then seeing, I think it was like the CTO of Polygon come on board and be like, hey, you could also build on our stuff. And I was starting to, yeah, just glimpse the initial clustering that you're describing. So super interesting to see this ecosystem evolve. Monty, I'm curious to lean into maybe just like a really simple high-level view of how much money has been carved out for Solo public goods over this time frame. And, you know, of that capital, what is going to, you know, likely be deployed via quadratic funding with Gitcoin? And then, you know, touch on the retroactive public goods part. And I just want to walk people through and make sure it's, easy to understand, because I know there's a lot of terminology. So maybe let's be clear for those newer to the space around like what we mean by quadratic and retroactive as we introduce it. But yeah, I'd love to get a take on that perspective.
Happy to give an overview there. So this initial proposal, the kind of pilot that Luke's mentioned, specifically the budget for the first half of this year, you know, concluding in the kind of Solo gather in Berlin, and the kind of public goods budget at a high level is a 1.6 million CUSD, Solo's native stablecoin, and 700,000 Solo tokens. And we've kind of split that into broad brackets. You know, allocating some for Solo's regional DAOs, you know, Solo Africa DAO, LATAM, etc. A bracket for Solo kind of project incubation that's being led by Presenti, and grants and requests for proposals. And then, of course, the kind of final bracket, the start of Solo's quadratic funding and retroactive public goods funding programs, which I'm personally really excited about and taking a bit more of a lead in developing some of the initial kind of strategy and thinking. But definitely would love to give just like a high level overview of quadratic funding and RPGF, because I know not everyone listening, I'm sure most people listening are probably pretty familiar, but super high level. Quadratic funding, I think, is a new community capital allocation mechanism. What that means is you have a source of grant funding that traditionally an NGO might, you know, accept loads of applications, and then a centralized body would, through a large bureaucratic process, review each application and go strategically, yes, we think that is the one we're going to allocate to. And QF really says, okay, like, let's have a kind of management system that tries to lay the infrastructure for this, but then really allow the community to come in and vote with their dollars. And so the voting with the dollars not only brings in additional funding, but it also provides that community signal of what do people really care about in this community. And when we look at public goods, it can be quite a difficult thing to look at in a centralized way and say, these are the public goods that we think needs. There's an element for that. But the people who often know the best are the people who consume those public goods and say, hey, that bit of open source software was super useful to me, or that community event, I really valued that. And then they can vote with their dollars, and then that helps to create that kind of community signal of what do people care about and what do they want to fund in the community. We've been through with ReFiDAO our own kind of whole experiments in this. We've run two Gitcoin featured rounds for our local node, a ReFi local node network. And during that time, it's been amazing to see how Gitcoin has evolved, you know, with the whole transition from its centralized grants to its decentralized platform. It's, you know, it's not been a super, you know, completely smooth journey. There's been bumps in the road. I'm sort of remembering GG18 when it was all running on Ethereum and everyone was paying like $50 gas to do a $2 donation. But what's been amazing is every round we've seen continual improvements from the Gitcoin team. And you know, really exciting stuff. And that's just going to continue, right? And now we have Aloe V2 being launched, which is why we're seeing the next Gitcoin grants program happening in April with Aloe V2. Which is really like the set of underlying smart contracts that enable a whole range of different grant funding, not even just grants, but funding strategies. And so, with those building blocks as well, it again opens up this whole potential for innovation, because quadratic funding is just one grant funding allocation strategy, of which there is now a whole range. And so that's a really open area of innovation, where the more experiments we can see from all different ecosystems, the more we can learn from that, the more we can really do what I think blockchains should be doing, which is becoming these super massive coordination and capital allocation machines that are exploring these innovative mechanisms and then using that to really create more value, which can be reinvested, grow the ecosystem. And ultimately, in the case of Celo, not just growing it for growing sake and to make a few people rich, but growing it with the mission of creating a regenerative economy, prosperity for all, investing in real world climate solutions and real world social impact projects. So that's what I'm super excited about.
Amazing. Love that. And how much are you guys thinking is going to run through these rounds? And actually, Ala will be running V2 on Celo, and this will be live within the next few months, and people can fund projects natively on Celo using Ala. Is that right?
Indeed. That is the plan. Should all go according to that. But in terms of the actual rounds, so we want to run a mix of quadratic funding rounds in the upcoming GG20 and then Celo's first RPGF round. And I'll kind of get into that in one sec, but I think first it might just be helpful to outline the kind of target scope that we're initially wanting to focus this kind of effort on. Given the context that Luke set around the kind of technical layers and coordination that's going on and that side of things is very much... There's a lot of energy and work and amazing stuff going on there. But within the context of Celo joining as an L2 or even an L3, the kind of verticals that we're really excited about of supporting in this public good space is, you know, the ReFi ecosystem, you know, the amazing projects that are actually developing these real world regenerative solutions. And Celo is, of course, the home to many of these amazing projects. So this is one of the verticals we're really excited about, creating more funding and opportunities and support for that ecosystem. And this kind of second vertical is the Celo DApp ecosystem, the tools and apps that create value for a wide array of different Celo users and stakeholders, whether that's CoinShift creating better accounting solutions for, you know, all of the organizations building on Celo, from Safe, and I know Luke's involved in a lot of that as well, and the whole range of different Celo tools and dApps that create value for being, you know, using Celo. And the final bracket is really the kind of community education and adoption angle, you know, supporting the kind of non-software projects that really help push Celo and the Web3 space forward. You know, we're talking about growing new communities, whether it's ReFi nodes, Green Pill chapters, Regens Unite, you know, onboarding people, providing educational resources, creating, you know, valuable content, inclusion, diversity and advocacy. All of this important work, which, again, I think is a super valuable source of public goods for the whole space that we need to show up for and provide support for. So that's a kind of outline of the three high level brackets that we're looking at. And then from that, trying to design a variety of different rounds that help to support those verticals in different ways.
Super cool, man. I'm so excited for this. This is so necessary. And I feel like it's happened very quickly from, you know, around this time last year, Gitcoin really hitting this decentralization button and so much enthusiasm and capital being deployed by optimism and just this proliferation of experiments around, like, how do we fund what matters? How do we use this tech to make a real difference in the world? I'd be curious to lean into a piece of the puzzle you described earlier, Luke, around, you know, capital being deployed initially from the Celo Community Fund on-chain to, you know, larger initiatives. There were several million dollars allocated to, you know, Presenti and Climate Collective and Credit Collective, these different groups who had a specific focus and change in the world. But I know it's been hard for these organizations to then very clearly demonstrate, okay, this is the impact that capital has had. And I'm curious how you guys are looking at this piece of the puzzle for this funding work stream.
Yeah, I think measuring and defining impact is always extremely challenging. And one of the, and especially, I personally also hit, I would say, a low point about a year and a half ago when I was trying to create so much impact in the world through Collectivo, through my initiatives, and realized that it's just really hard to measure that and communicate that. Because often things aren't a single, like, it's not a straight line. Impact happens in more like a tornado of different activities that then can result into positive impact. So what we are looking at is to make it very simple. And it's also something that you see, for example, Optimism leaning into. They just make a very simple meme. Impact equals profit. Of course, it's not exactly right, but it's definitely simple enough for people to just use that as a frame of reference. Did I get make profit, impact? Yeah, okay, great. And from our perspective, what we're trying to do is really simplify the reporting of the things you're doing and get it, creating a habit of building and kind of reporting in public. Because a lot in this kind of space, especially if we're still in the innovation space, right, in the explorative stage, it's very important that people feel empowered and to share what they've learned, to share what they've accomplished, to share what they haven't accomplished. And I think that's just part of this kind of transformation we hope to realize. So we aim to leverage tools. I think one of the best examples is HyperCerts. It's a way to mint so-called impact claims where you can define what work you did, what at least your perceived impact is from that work, what the time frame is, et cetera. And we're currently working on mapping out how we can create simple HyperCerts for these initial buckets. Yeah. And it could be as simple as every regional DAO minting a HyperCert for every event they organize. As simple as every grantee that gets funding to mint a HyperCert at the start, at the middle, and at the end of their program, explaining what they've done in the past, what they've done in the past 2 months, and what they did at the end, or things like that, that can just make it at least visible, right? It's visualizing what is happening as a first step. And then hopefully from there, gravitate towards really optimizing for specific types of impact. But I don't think we're really at that stage yet at Celo, but I think also in the wider blockchain space to extremely well be able to say, this is the perfect impact we're optimizing for, and this is the right way to accomplish it. I think we're still in this kind of explorative stage. We're just visualizing things is, I think, our first aim. And then from there, slowly starting to make optimizations. But and that's possible with the tools that we have nowadays.
Super interesting. Yeah, I appreciate the introduction of HyperCerts. And I know, Monty, you were one of the big catalysts at ReFi Week. Say, hey, guys, we need to mint a HyperCert for all these trees we're planting. You know, we need to be experimenting with these tools and, you know, playing with these primitives and seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and participating in the evolution of this conversation. And I love the idea of, you know, events using HyperCerts to demonstrate this is the impact we have, this is the amount of people we brought on, and maybe even these are the amount of wallets that were created. You know, I think getting to that level of specificity becomes really helpful. And yes, it probably doesn't cover all the impact in all the ways, but we're moving that needle toward. I'm curious about one specific form of impact, which would be to say, okay, imagine a community initiative on the ground that just plants a bunch of trees. And maybe they mint a HyperCert on Celo to say, hey, we planted a bunch of trees, here's all the data. But maybe they didn't have anything to do with blockchain. Is this type of climate initiative eligible for funding via this work stream?
I think ultimately that's what we'd like to see. And that, again, is where I really think that ReFi local nodes and other kind of on the ground communities are able to really create that bridge between the kind of technical financial world of Web3 and blockchains at this kind of global layer. And then the kind of real grassroots action on the ground, many of which they're not going to have a deep understanding of these advanced technical primitives, sources of finance, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so if we can have communities on the ground who are able to, you know, map out the local regenerative economy, the impact projects, help support in the onboarding and using of these tools in a way where everyone feels valued and has a place in that, I think that's a really exciting kind of nexus, really, or way we can do that. And one of the things I think that's been interesting inside of ReFi DAO is we've been going through this exact same kind of problem space of, you know, we have this network of, you know, 30 plus local nodes across the globe. And so far, we've really said, you know, we've distributed over 55K of funding, and it's really been on a culture of trust and social verification and accountability and honestly a bit of top-down kind of reporting and review, right? Like going to the local nodes and saying, hey, what have you done with the funding? And then we create a giant article that we put on Mirror that kind of outlines all of the things. But ultimately, that's not a system that scales. And like myself and a few others, like having to do all of that research in a centralized Notion doc, like that's not gonna be the kind of scaled solution. And so What's been really exciting is to see the innovations in hyperserts, in Ethereum attestations, in decentralized evaluation of these claims, and also the advanced impact frameworks and digital MRV. You know, obviously, I've been doing a lot of work in the ecological benefits framework and thinking about what are the synergies there between, okay, now we have someone makes an impact claim, right? I planted X amount of trees. Cool. I mean, it's a self-made claim. We should ultimately have some level of skepticalness of claims that are being self-reported for financial gain. And so then that's where this whole layer of evaluation and monitoring and impact frameworks comes in, that then if it's facilitated on a transparent platform like blockchain is, we can bring in all sorts of different evaluation methodologies and techniques that really get us towards this kind of decentralized distributed system for impact measurement, reporting, and verification, which I think is super exciting. I mean, it's only just getting started, right? Like, we know that the tech is not fully there yet. There is, you know, hyperserts are great, but they're not super usable right now. But we want to start exploring that, pushing the edges, learning what we can, and then building on top of that tech stack and others that, you know, obviously being adopted around the wider kind of superchain blockchain ecosystem as well. So super excited to see how that whole work stream kind of emerges and the kind of innovations that might be possible.
Totally. And I think this is a fundamentally different vision than what originally propelled me into ReFi, which was like, oh, carbon markets on the blockchain. There are now, you know, capital flowing to places that otherwise wouldn't, and we can change this legacy market using this new tech, you know, raise the price, finance projects through this old infrastructure. And what I think we witnessed was the old infrastructure wasn't ready for this type of innovation experimentation. And now we're witnessing a very interesting grassroots emergence that really reflects more of the network values of blockchains. I have a somewhat cynical take that I want to offer, which is to say, you know, aren't public goods in these blockchain contexts just ecosystem development? You know, previously, blockchain ecosystems would deploy capital to grow their network and get more users and more transactions to fundamentally return value to their shareholders, of which most of them are, you know, venture capital, except for in case of Ethereum and Bitcoin, and, you know, maybe a handful of others by exception. But I'm curious what makes this different? What makes this different, and how do we know when this is just another, you know, craze that ends up being greenwashing? You know, because I think these are tricky boundaries to play with here.
Yeah, I'd love to take that one. I think, and I'm also going to try to bring it back to the previous topic, because I think it's kind of interconnected. If you look at it as regenerative economics, and I'm really trying to wrap my head around practical regenerative economics, how do we really bootstrap self-funding, positive externality economies at scale? I think that kind of positive externalities and self-funding are two key concepts to take into account. If a blockchain is not creating positive externalities, if it's not moving real people in the right direction, it's not useful to the world. If it's doing the opposite, if it's taking money from people and making the world more unequal, then it's negative and we should probably ignore it. Then on the other side, if a blockchain is unable to fund its own development and operations, it won't be able to keep doing it, and that value will also continue to diminish. So I think the combination really is being able to self-fund, which is why you need ecosystem development. You need to create utility, to create value, but you also need to return some of that value for it to be regenerative, right? The whole concept of regenerative is that you grow in capital assets over time and that you kind of nurture the well-being of the entire ecosystem. But like I said, not forgetting the bigger game you're contributing to and measuring it every single time. Let's imagine Salo joins the layer 2. Am I making the layer 2 better? Yes. Am I making Ethereum better? Yes. Am I making digital public goods? Yes. Am I making the world a better place? Yes. Great. Then we're onto the right track, and we want to then grow that game. We're playing a good game, so we want that game to grow in scale. And to me, that's kind of how I imagine practical creation of regenerative economics. And of course, my main project has always been and will be Colectivo, where we try to make a toolkit for localized regenerative economics. And somewhere throughout that journey, we also got caught up into the climate, asset, natural capital tinkering. We got to this perspective where in order to take good care of nature, we need to value nature, we need to put it at the center of everything we do. But I think my perspective has shifted towards people. If we want to save nature, we got to change people. And the way we do that is, from my perspective, you just ask this question, can someone planting trees somewhere in the world get funding from this? I would say partially. But from my experience, the people that should value that most are people that have a direct relationship to those trees in that locality.
Yeah.
I think especially, and I think that goes back to these to this layer two clusters, right? Should every project in the world care about a new light client that makes blockchain simpler? Yes. But who is more likely to fund it? The blockchains that it's deployed on, the blockchains that are going to use it, the blockchains. So do people value trees somewhere in the world? Yes, a little bit. I value a tree in India as much as I value a tree in Canada, as much as I value a tree in... But what I value more is a tree in front of my house. That tree, I want to pay for even more. So I think that that's the infrastructure that we hope that I hope we create. It's kind of these multidimensional, all the way from local specific to global neutral. But currently, I see the global neutral as a nice to have and the local specific as the must have. We need to create things, first and foremost, in Celo that is valued by the Celo stakeholders. And then from there, we can abstract that away further to, again, layer two, Ethereum, digital public goods, real world impact, etc. And I think the same can happen on local physical cases. Trees planted in Curaçao should first be valued by Curaçao, secondly by the Caribbean, third by, as you just imagine, interacting with that asset more. So I think that's kind of how I see this, this evolution, really towards utility. I think utility is the key word here. And it goes all the way back to the beginning where Monty said, hey, my mom was into climate and business. I think to me, that's also what got me excited when I was doing eco-philosophy. It's not, but also business. It's not just about doing the right thing, but it's doing the right thing in a way that allows you to keep doing it more and better. And that to me is a regenerative economy.
I appreciate that take. And I know you, of all people, have gone super, super deep in this and lived this out through and through and, you know the importance of locality and also the vision that needs to extend to a global economy. And I think for me, it's just, radically important to continue to stress test these ideas and make sure we're really living out these regenerative values at every step of the way. And, you know, ultimately that people who are in positions of power, overseeing flows of capital, you know, we got to check ourselves and we got to have accountability structures to check one another. And I know you guys are going to do a great job of that. And I appreciate the, the hard work you put into this space. I think there's some interesting kind of work to do to unpack the Celo 2 transition amidst all of this, because I think it seems to be a very central part of the puzzle where, you know, there's this large technical migration that really, in many ways, I think does determine the future of Celo and its success and the success of this organization to fund its own initiatives and to, you know, deploy regenerative values in its economic base layer, things like this. How do you understand this transition, Luke? What are the kind of relative time frames, and what does it ultimately mean for the builders and the users of the protocol? I think it'd just be helpful, just get an up-to-date perspective on this.
Yeah, the timeline is with anything in tech, always evolving and always pushing it a bit further, because I think you start to see new input. When you mentioned it before, initially, Celo just started experimenting with the OP stack, and then multiple ecosystems also made their proposal, which was very positive because it allowed Celo, and especially the C-Labs team that is spearheading that kind of research, to not just compare one stack and experiment with one stack, but do it with three or four different stacks. And we've gravitated, I think we're now at the stage where the basic understanding of the pros and cons of each of these technology systems is kind of wrapped up. And now we're in this final evaluation stage, which is, again, more towards the economic human side. What would it really look like to participate in a layer two ecosystem? What would your governance rights be? What would the economics be? What is the upside for Celo builders, for Celo users? And I would imagine that taking another couple of weeks, but we have seen the first tangible let's call it an offer or proposal from the Optimism ecosystem, which some economics and kind of governance notes. I hope to see something comparable in the coming weeks from the other ecosystems. And I think then it's on to making a decision with potentially some clear how to kind of unwind this decision if in 3 years, or it's kind of how to manage this relationship moving forward. Because the reality with anything in the world, but especially tech, is it's really hard to estimate how it develops. I think in a couple of weeks, we would be able to at least make the best decision for now and commit to that for a couple of years and really explore how to evolve from there. I think that relationship, kind of the maintaining that, I think it really falls back to, at the very basics, of course, technological function. Do we, as Salo, again, we want one block for, we want fast finality, we want very cheap transactions because sometimes we're doing micropayments. Can we do all of that on that technology stack?
Yeah.
And then next to that, does this ecosystem, this larger ecosystem, set us up to build a regenerative economy, a regenerative digital economy? Does it provide us with the network, the reach, the insights, the finance, the tools to realize that vision? Or are there ecosystems that are doing that or potentially doing that way, way, way better? But I think that to me, or one kind of thought experiment I would love to allow people to play around with is using this concept of a nation state. Although I highly dislike the overall direction of the term kind of blockchain nation state, digital nation states, because it's often been used as an inward looking definition. We, the nation, protecting our nation rights. But that's not really how geopolitics works. You are a nation in relation to other nations in a network of the world. And the way I see these layer two ecosystem is almost like a European Union or trade blocks. You're saying, hey, we are more like them and we do more with them. So we together are going to give each other perks and help and benefit and what so. And I think Celo is maybe at the center of the world, at least their own world, and now need to make that decision which kind of union is the one that is best set up for our end users, the people in emerging countries that we want to propel forward. So I think it's a really exciting move. It's going to be a partially political, governance, economic move for sure. It's going to be a technical move, but I'm pretty confident that whatever decision made, is the right decision, because going into this terrain is just going to teach us so much about how to operate as a digital coordination vehicle, how to operate as a blockchain, how to operate towards a set of vision. So I'm just really excited that, and also kudos to the team for making this bold move. I mean, I'm looking at it now, of course I'm involved, but I've been looking at it for a time around the sideline, and it's not easy to kind of give up on your technical vision, or at least not give up on it, but just acknowledge that you don't need to do everything yourself. And I'm better off participating with others. So big kudos to the Celo C-Labs, Celo Foundation team for making the move, and also kudos for allowing people like Mira Monti, who have no relationship to these entities, to be able to step up and steward such important work. I think it really shows that the leadership and the vision of Celo are in the right place, and I'm super, super bullish.
Absolutely. And I think it's so vitally important that you guys have managed to carve out this significant amount of capital for funding public goods with the definition that you described. I know, Monty, you introduced kind of refi and impact-oriented projects as this first pillar. I'd love to get your take on, you know, what this means for the emerging refi ecosystem on Celo and beyond. What are you seeing? What are you excited about? And yeah, what are some of the ideas you're playing with for these rounds and, you know, these funding mechanisms that are emerging?
Absolutely. Totally. So yeah, in terms of what it actually means for refi builders and project builders in the Web3 space, with Celo becoming a kind of regenerative blockchain ecosystem in it continuing to sustain itself, we can grow this program essentially. So we're starting off with a kind of pilot public goods program, looking to run three rounds, the current plans anyway, looking to run three rounds in the upcoming GG20 in April. We're looking to do a partnership with Climate Coordination Network, who have been doing an awesome job running the climate solutions round, with Gitcoin that then spun out into their own entity. With that, we're looking to add an additional Celo matching to support the climate projects that are building in the Celo ecosystem. And really, in the longer term, look to really develop and grow that program so that as Celo and within the larger blockchain context, blockchains are becoming more and more these economic machines that are generating more and more revenues. Well, okay, now we need to go from just funding, the internal blockchain stuff to delivering the real value in the real world. And luckily, the kind of innovations that have been going on in terms of these funding allocation mechanisms, we can now apply in the climate solution space, in these traditional impact sectors, and really bring a wave of innovation in funding and support towards that. So with this initial kind of climate solutions round, I think for me, that feels like the beginning of a larger intention to support impact projects, to support ReFi, to support the kind of impact space on the Celo ecosystem and broader than that. And if we look at the potential, if Celo is joining as a potential layer three, say, to the Optimism ecosystem, Celo's focus within that will specifically be on, ReFi, real-world assets and the kind of carving out its space in that. But then also the kind of coordination and the cross compatibility with Optimism, say, Optimism doing its giant retroactive funding models. Hey, if you're a Celo ReFi project, you might now be applicable not only for our Celo public goods program, but this whole wider ecosystem of funding and support and mechanisms. And so I think that becomes a really compelling proposition for projects, trying to make that decision. I think that's super exciting. And the other kind of programs that we're looking at running on GT20, again, the kind of Celo DApp ecosystem, the projects and developers and that are building and increasing the utility of Celo, and of course, the community education and adoption angle as well. So all of that in April, and then that should set us the foundations to kind of really get a good map of what are the projects out there that are building on Celo, creating these public goods, and lay the foundations towards this first retroactive public goods funding round that we're looking to run hopefully in sort of June, July time.
Amazing.
Starting with, leveraging the tools that and the insights that Optimism has laid down, and they've done gone through a process of actually sharing those insights. They've developed a kind of tool, Easy Retro PGF, that's based on the best practice that they've run in their programs.
So how can we
utilize that within Celo and further build on that, innovate, and then grow this program, again, continuing to create more opportunities for the builders and the real world impact projects. So yeah, that's what I'm really excited about. And I think there's a ton of interesting opportunities for people to get involved.
So freaking cool. Yeah, I think there's also a really interesting design landscape emerging between the Celo regional DAOs and then these more city or, location-specific local nodes or green pill chapters. And, these are all coordination primitives at the end of the day that are trying to funnel capital to where it's needed most. And I think one of the things that sparked element of excitement for me was I was sitting down with a guy named Ray Bankless, who was early DAO contributor, been a part of many ecosystems, first in Turkey and now in Lisbon. And he's playing with a primitive, I don't know the exact device, but a kind of very, very simplified hardware wallet, connecting it to a scale and then allowing people during beach cleanup, say, to weigh their bag, have it checked by somebody, there's not dumps of sand in there, and then scan a QR code and sign an attestation from their own personal wallet that this was their contribution. And so I could imagine, even this level of specificity, being able to really begin to anchor, blockchains as points of truth to coordinate value towards, even individual beach cleanups in a specific city, say. And I really like this kind of this reach that Celo now has through the regional DAOs, the events, the local community organizing, the gathering, and now pretty significant sums of capital being deployed towards public goods. And so I think this is a really exciting time, and it really, for me, feels like this is the second wave majorly of ReFi. It seems as though, the first one was a catalytic spark that emerged out of nowhere for many people and brought hundreds of builders in. But I'd love to get your take, Luke, in terms of what will be the peak, and what are some of the patterns and trends that we should see in this next wave of ReFi, Luke, and what are the things that we should be skeptical of and concerned about? Just love to get your take, and then I think we're good.
I think the peak would be when these when we are really truly able to move away from these traditional plural kind of systemic systems and really embrace these more holistic, evolving systems that blockchains or regenerative economies are. I think if we look back at the first wave of, let's say, ReFi, I think we got forced into by traditional thinking and capital to again think in specific verticals with a specific focus. And that often makes things so hard and stressful, right? We need to be successful. It's like zero or one, where in reality, like I said, regeneration impact isn't a straight line. It's a journey. It's a process. So I think the moment we can have more people earning a living or part of their living by engaging in these systems, I think that's the moment that we grow. And that brings us all the way back to why I've been called Luke the Taoist or Luke Tao for 4 or 5 years. Was this one moment where I was walking around in Denver like 4 years ago. And it's like, wait, if I can just do work in the system, I can continue to build myself up and become a better person. And that's why I'm called Luke Tao, because I'm like the Tao myself. And yeah, long story short, I think ultimately it's this intersection between impact and business, being able to make a living from contributing to these positive sum games, by making a living to participating in regenerative economy. So what to look out for is, again, models that are short-term, single-value oriented, things that are just there for a single payout, whether it's just cash or just attention or just... It's always a multitude of things over a longer time frame that is more rewarding. And I think as the prices are going up, again, I remember a couple months ago seeing a ReFi project with Lionel Messi as the mascot. And I think be careful for those things, because it's a lot of hard work and a lot of mistakes and a lot of learning in public that get us towards actual solutions. Yeah, so anything that looks like... anything that moves fast, be cautious. Take a deeper look and know that this takes years and years of progress to even get to a semi-sensible outcome.
I was brainstorming. I think we need a ReFi red flags service of a bunch of people in the space who, when we see something like this, are like, okay, guys, we might need to look at this and be a bit more skeptical. Because obviously if we see this resurgence in ReFi, we're going to see what we've seen in most of other crypto. We're going to see people who are trying to take advantage of that. And so, we've got to up our game as well in terms of, how we guide.
And maybe as a final note, to me, I went through a very rough time about a year ago. And the one promise I made to myself is I'm only going to work on things that are fun. And I think that's also something that we need to bring back into the space, the joy of doing something, the joy of exploring a transaction and making a mistake, the joy of learning something in public, the joy of just participating in this movement. And sometimes it helps to, again, not put too much money at stake or not be overcommitted to something, so that you can be more playful and be more open-minded.
Totally, man. Yeah, I really resonate with that. And for me, get outside, enjoy nature, be a part of real communities, doing real work, and diversify your life. Don't just live in the blockchain bubble. I think it's easy to get trapped and get sapped because it's so exciting and there's so much stuff happening all the time. But thank you guys. I think we're over time here and want to honor what other commitments you have today. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you for stewarding this capital, for bringing it apart towards purpose, towards impact. Public goods in Celo feels like the next stage of this evolution, and excited to see where it goes from here. And who knows, maybe ReFi Pod can be a part of the movement moving forward.
Yeah, bullish on ReFi Podcast, bullish on Luke Dow. Super grateful for you both. You're awesome, inspirational leaders for me personally, and I think for the entire ReFi and Web3 space. So really grateful to be here. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, both.
Take care.
It's been awesome. Have a good rest. Thanks so much.
Ciao. Peace.
Ciao.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. I would be so incredibly grateful if you had a couple moments to leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This really helps us reach incredible guests and to gain traction with audience members just like you, who are looking for the right levers to make a contribution to this unfolding symphony of regeneration. Appreciate your time, and always do let us know what you think. If there's anything we can do to improve, drop us a note in the comments and we'll listen in and figure out how we can make this a service to this unfolding movement of regeneration. Thanks.